Good evening, everyone. I'd like to welcome you to March the 18th, 2015 Board of Supervisors meeting. Would you please stand and say the pledge, and we'll have a moment of silence.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. We need to welcome some very special people in the audience. You know who you are, right? Students, 12th graders. Would y'all stand?
Bucketful.
Oh, all right. Thank you. Okay, first we will have the adoption of the agenda. Does anyone want to make any changes?
So may.
Questions? Okay, do I have a second? All right, we have a motion by Mr. Weaver, a second by Mr. O'Brien. All in favor?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Thank you. County Administrator's report, please.
Yes, ma'am. Madam Chair, members of the board, just a few things to report and a couple of questions to ask. The SCC hearings for the proposed Aqua rate increase were held Monday afternoon, Monday evening here in the courthouse. Went extremely well. The sheriff's office, the state police, county staff all worked really well together. And Public Works was out there on the roads, and the sheriff's office and the state troopers kind of coordinated everything. Mr. McMahon and Mr. Stevens set up the audio and video, so we had video and audio downstairs in the district courtroom. So this was packed, and that one was about half full. And so we really appreciate it. But I'd really like to especially thank Kelly Belanger Harris, our clerk to the board, who really orchestrated most of that with the State Corporation Commission.
Thank you, Kelly.
So everybody did a great job, and thank you to her for her supporting role in getting everybody on the same page. Worked out really well.
Yes, it was.
The State Corporation Commission was also particularly pleased with the setup for them and the support, and they were really appreciative. They sent thank you notes back. So. Congratulations to Aaron Spitzer. He got a really nice note from his boss. Actually, got a really nice note earlier today from a citizen talking about how Aaron was really helpful with the homeschool kids on their athletics that he was working with them on, and just another tribute to the great services our Parks and Rec folks provide to the community. The Columbia and Cunningham schools, I think, as I told you before, the state contract team came to meet with us. They've decided they do not want to take on that sale based on the variety of factors. So we're in the process of drafting a request for proposals that will go out to engage a realty firm to take the lead on selling those two old facilities for us. The Savannah Christian Service Society has finally come back with a formal request for the construction of their new food bank at Carysbrook. And they would request the opportunity to lease land from the county at fair market value. They would build the food bank building. They would operate the food bank, and then the building would revert to county ownership if the FCSS left. Excuse me. This would be in the parking lot behind where the MACA thrift shop is at Carysbrook, adjacent to where the food bank building is now. But they didn't want a much larger building, like a 24-by-40 steel-sided building with a slab to be able to provide better services for the county. So with your concurrence, I'll go forward with trying to draft up an agreement, have the county attorney chop it, and then we come back before you for a review and approval.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Everybody on board?
Yeah,
yes.
Any questions about this?
I see some nodding heads.
You see three.
Okay, good.
You give a good report.
And then just like to say, I don't have it with me tonight, but Ms. Roxanne Carter-Johnson, our volunteer coordinator for the county, has created a really, really nice logo for our volunteer programs countywide. You'll see that soon on our website for the volunteer things. We'll have it on some posters Saturday at the volunteer event at the high school that the Savannah Leadership Development Program is going on. But Jonathan McMahon also acquired another web address for us so that anything we want to tell anybody about volunteer opportunities, just say to go to fluvannavolunteers.org. and it will take us to any of our county websites will feed into that. And then her email address is just volunteer@savannahcounty.org. Mm-hmm. So a lot of simple things to be put in place with this new logo on top, and then she'll be there with me manning the booth on Saturday at the volunteer fair, and has a lot of really great ideas to get the word out and create a community database of volunteers to support community events and activities. And I would like to request a special work session. Normally you do your work sessions at 4 o'clock on the afternoon before your evening meeting. But we really need to meet back with the FRA, and also you really need to hear a full water system brief with FUSD and an update on that from Mr. Stevens, but also on the Zion Crossroads design and on the Master Water and Sewer Plan. Now, we can do it really whenever you want, but one slot that's open coming up that gives us a little more time to do it would be your May 6th meeting at 4 o'clock, have dinner after the 4 o'clock meeting, and then come back in for a work session on these kinds of topics, and it'll be pretty broad-ranging. I'm not sure you'll get a formal FRA recommendation, but at least you can give us an indication of which way to go then, if there hasn't been a formal recommendation by then. But the water and sewer infrastructure update, especially on FUSD, is going to be really important. We need to get. I don't want to do it during budget season, but that's the first time after that, and it would be after your 4 o'clock meeting, if that's acceptable.
I would think it would be all right on May the 6th, okay. As you say.
I'm not going to be there.
Okay. Oh, good. Then we can pass all that stuff then.
Yeah.
May 20th might be better for me.
Okay.
May 6th works for me.
Yeah, the 20th would be after your 4 o'clock meeting. It would limit us on time. But
yeah, we could do it at 4 o'clock. It's after this. Before the 7 p.m.
We could, yes, but it just limits the amount of time. This is going to be a pretty broad-ranging discussion. Plus, if you're going to have the FRA come meet with you, the FRA has a hard time coming during work day, you know, like at 4 o'clock like that, because many of them have jobs during the day as volunteers. But I can always try to find a different night or something. But I'll revisit with you in the next couple of weeks, because
okay.
You've got, let me get to the next one quick. I'm assuming you're going to want to cancel the budget work session next Wednesday.
Yes.
Because I think you're pretty much wrapped up. So your next meetings after that would be April 1st for a public hearing, April 8th for a public hearing, and April 15th for regular meeting and budget adoption. So at those meetings, I'll get back with you on timing and dates and things like that, and see what we can work out that'll work for your schedules. Because we really need to get a really good water discussion going on some updates on everything and on FUSD especially.
So there's a special meeting.
I'm sorry, 1st, 8th, and 15th.
The 15th.
Yeah. Your first is your regular meeting, and it's also a public hearing for the tax rate because of the reassessment year. The 8th is a special meeting for your budget public hearing, and the 15th is when you adopt a budget with tax rates associated with it. So the public hearing for the tax rate increase during a reassessment year just can't be at the same time as the budget public hearing. So they can't be combined together. So that's why you've got one on the 1st at your regular meeting, the budget one on the 8th, and then the 15th is when you have your regular meeting and adopt the budget. So at one of those meetings, I'll get back with you on timing for
okay.
work session,
should
see what works.
Be at 4 p.m.?
Yes, but it's a public hearing.
Public hearing.
And so
that'll
come back out to you. That's why I've got it marked in red on there. I'm glad you said that. Sorry. It is because it's a public hearing, our public hearings at 7 p.m. So normally it would be a 4 in the afternoon meeting, but it will be an evening meeting. Let me back up. So the Fortune Streetscape, the project kickoff with the engineering firm that's doing the project, and VDOT and our contract oversight, was held Friday, Thursday, Monday, a few days ago.
What do you mean a kickoff?
To meet with the engineers.
We're not putting a shovel in the ground.
Can you imagine that we would start a streetscape without you having a shovel in your hand there?
That's what I was wondering.
So, ceremonial groundbreaking for the project. The date is pending. We're going to be coordinating with you and the Fork Union Streetscape work group team, the citizen team that there. We'll be coordinating with you and them to get this set up and have the press there to do a ceremonial groundbreaking. But the proposed start date of the project is coming up pretty quick. It's April 6th. And then
good.
It generally is going to be a 60 to 90-day project time. Even though the contract says 240 days, it'll be much quicker than that. But they also have to work around the Fork Union graduations and things like that, too. But so more to come, and we'll be getting with key individuals and letting the rest of you know about the when the groundbreaking ceremony of groundbreaking will be, so Mrs. Booker can have a shovel.
Hard.
And so just a reminder on the meetings, we'll cancel next week. Your next regular meeting will be at 7 p.m. on Wednesday, April 1st. And I'm not joking. April 1st.
April Fool Day.
Okay. It's a former supervisor's birthday.
Any questions?
Yes. Selling of the two elementary schools.
Yes, sir.
Could the county actually sell them themselves? Why could we not? I'm not saying that we need to get involved with it, but I'm just wondering if we could take a shot at it.
You could.
Okay, that answers my question.
Who would do it? Your office?
Well, you could.
We'd probably have it done through the Mr. Rodish's office, I would expect. We'd have to be involved in it.
Yeah.
But
sure
we would sign. One of the options, and we have thought about this, one of the options would be simply to auction the property with a reserve and then have whatever contract results from the auction be subject to the board's approval in its sole discretion after the public hearing, because it would have to be a public hearing on it. Now, that would have the benefit of, it would have the drawback, but wouldn't be actively marketed the way a realtor would market it. It would be marketed however we chose to market it. The advantage is, of course, there wouldn't be any commission.
Well, yes, I'll bring up a suggestion later on, then you can present it to the board, but I think we should move on like we are right now with find a real estate agent
there's
and
no
go
reason
ahead
not,
with it.
There's no reason not to put out the RFP.
That's right.
Because if you decide to do it the other way, you could either qualify that contract or simply reject all the offers.
That's what I thought. Okay.
You could.
I don't know anything about selling property, so it seems a little mysterious to me, and I'm not
it's
sure.
It's not.
You kind of have to have staff around to be able to go then show the building over and over and over and well, maybe three times, but if anybody ever looks at it. But okay, we'll certainly put that on the
list. Yes.
Aye, sir. Any other questions for the board?
Do we have any questions for Mr. Nichols? If not, we have Board of Supervisors updates. Ms. Tony, any board
commissioners? PWN, Community Outreach Network, was part of the selection committee for the new provider. That's why I have not heard back as a final, but that the selection committee unanimously recommended goodwill for both the Charlottesville operation and the Culpeper operation, and for the Charlottesville youth operation and the Culpeper youth operation. So that's a change in providers in Culpeper for the adult services. Previously, that was being provided by is currently being provided by the social services. So that was a vote. There were three respondents to the RFP. ResCare is a national provider of workforce networks. And while they were impressive, they had a couple of negative feedback from some folks in Shenandoah. And so they were thought to not be the best choice. Goodwill, the operations there have run smoothly. There's been significant improvements, and they've had an opportunity to improve the operation.
Okay, thank you.
Then, likewise, I was at the Lake Monticello SEC hearing. So, earlier in the week here, and for those of you that weren't there, we had two very busy days. I had two very busy meetings. I was there for the second meeting. Several hundred people spoke and listed their complaints and issues with Aqua and against the rate increase. And I spoke and I said very much the same thing and felt that it was affecting the county as a whole. So that was my update.
Okay. Bob, anything?
No.
Anything?
I did not make it to the RAB meeting. Baseball's cranked up, but I did call President Parrish. He informed me that y'all spent most of the RAB meeting talking about
this is in Parks and Recreation.
Parks and Recreation, yes, ma'am. Talking about the dog ordinance and setting up a committee to help study that. So he talked about being trying to reach out and get animal control possibly involved in the sheriff. Did I miss anything? That was the biggest thing. I think the other thing, they're kind of looking at us for guidance on what we want from them as a group. That was the other thing that he brought up to me. So that's, and talking about the Columbia Task Force, we have not met recently, but they had to vote yesterday, and it was 18-1 to disenfranchise.
And on that note, we did talk. I went to the town council meeting last night, and the town council was requesting a task force meeting fairly soon to be able to get an idea of where we're at with the grants and the town change and things like that. So once that is done, once the task force meets, then we'll come back to the board with an update and recommendations and what the process and flow is as this goes forward. And Fred can give you an update on the legal steps that are going on.
Still have to. I think I saw somewhere somebody was talking about the General Assembly still what, has to approve that.
What needs to happen is the town, that's Mrs. Phillips, has to report back to the circuit court to inform the court officially of the results of the referendum and notify the Secretary of the Commonwealth. The court would then enter an order annulling the corporate existence of the town. And it would, unless there's some special circumstance that would occur, it would be effective on January the 1st of next year. At the time the order is entered, it's up to the parties, and effectively that means it's up to us to notify our representatives in the General Assembly that this has happened and request that they repeal the charter for the town. Those are the mechanical steps need to go through.
And I understand that's July 2016.
I'm sorry?
I was told yesterday that's July.
I believe that's an error of the statute. I think
General Assembly.
I'm sorry?
The General Assembly.
The General Assembly's statute is bills are typically effective either June 1 or July 1, whether it's the short session or the long session. But they can be effective anytime they say. And the statute just simply says that the order is effective January 1, and then the next step is to repeal
that's charter. What I'm telling you. I got that from state senators.
Yeah, that may well be, but the town's existence will cease as of January 1, based on court.
After that, all they're doing is changing the law. That's what the assembly's doing, is changing the law that calls it an incorporated town. But the courts will already decide they won't be as of January 1st, according to state law.
I don't think we're talking about anything different. It's just that the General Assembly doesn't meet till after January 1st.
Okay. All right. Thank you. I attended the job or executive.
I'm sorry, Ms. Book. Can I mention one other thing?
Sure.
Mr. Sheridan brought up the barking dog ordinance. We have
this is the leash.
You're talking about the leash law. Okay.
This is about Pleasant Grove.
Yeah, okay.
All right. I attended the JABA executive board meeting, and we talked a lot about the PACE program that we're trying to get more and more participants in the PACE program. That's a total service for the elderly in order to keep them at home and out of nursing homes. They're having an open house. You may have seen the notice pretty soon. If you haven't had a chance to visit the PACE Center, I would ask that you do that, because I think we can maybe be some advocates in our community and our districts when we hear about our elderly that's struggling in some way to get the services that they need. That's a real good program.
And did that, Ms. Booker, just an update from Richmond. There are three PACE centers that in the Richmond area, maybe more than three, but three of them. One is closing down, one is ramping back, and one is staying in existence, but I'm not sure if that will affect our PACE program.
One in Petersburg is closing.
Right.
And we are concerned about the Charlottesville one, although they're saying that we're okay. You've seen some of the commercials on TV, and they've had several of those on TV. So it's trying to just get the word out. I think the problem is, when you've had a doctor, your own private doctor, for 20, 30, 40 years, and then when you go into the PACE program, they have all their doctors, nurses, everybody right there. And it's a team approach. It's kind of hard to step away from that primary doctor and let these people take care of you. And I think that's somewhat of the problem. I did have the opportunity to go to both of the SCC meetings on, it was yesterday, right?
Monday.
It was Monday at 2 and at 7. And I was extremely impressed with the presentations made by our citizens that's on the Aqua water line. They had done their homework. It was enlightening to me. I learned something from just listening to them, and they did it with such dignity and respect, and it was a real good shout out for Fluvanna County citizens, and I appreciate that very much of how they went about that. And then I think there's a meeting on the 24th in Richmond. Is there something on another meeting with the SCC?
They've got three public hearings coming. They've got some in Caroline County, mm-hmm. Blacksburg, and then back in Richmond. And I'm not sure what dates those are, but I think the 24th is one of them in Richmond.
Yeah, so. I'd like to go to that if I could. All right, thank you all so much for your reports. And now I will open our first public comments. If you would like to speak to the board, would you come forward and give your name, address, and you have 5 minutes. Now, we have two public hearings this evening. We have two public hearings. So if you want to speak on the public hearings, would you wait until then? If you want to talk about anything else, you can do it now.
Well, I wanted to talk about the ordinance that you're going to consider.
Okay, could you wait until the public hearing?
Oh, I thought that's what this was.
No, this is just public comments.
Oh, mm-hmm.
So that's all right.
No problem. Mm-hmm.
Anyone? Any comments? Yes, ma'am.
Ma'am,
you have to come to
please
the
step
mic.
Up the microphone.
Come to the mic, give your name and your address. And this is any other comments other than the two public hearings that we have today. Okay.
Good evening. I'm Patricia Burkett, and I live at 14 Wisteria Way, Lake Monticello. And I read better than I talk, so I'm going to use my notes. I'm here to make a brief statement in reference to the Citizens United ruling by the U.S. Supreme Court and the disastrous effect this ruling has had on our democratic electoral process. The court ruled that corporations had personhood, and spending money was equal to free speech as stated in the Bill of Rights First Amendment. Therefore, those who had a great deal of money could speak a great deal, and those who had little money couldn't. This ruling has unleashed a flood of undisclosed money, and corporations and the wealthy are now able to dramatically influence our elections. Today, 42% of the wealth in this country is controlled by 1% of the population. This is plutocracy, rule by the wealthy. It is not democracy. Our founding fathers took great care to limit the scope of corporations, but over time, as the country changed from an agrarian nation to one dominated by commerce, those limits changed also. The power and influence of corporations steadily became greater, and their influence began to be felt in government actions. The Citizens United ruling removed these restraints, and laws that had been crafted over many years to protect the environment, children, health, and fundamental rights were struck down if they were unduly burdensome to corporations or violated their free speech. This would include such things as no inspection for environmental or health violations without warrant or prior notice, no differential taxes, no labeling of GMOs, product origins, or other ingredients. Health warning labels on cigarettes are now under fire. Corporate entities exist solely to make money. They are not people, and yet the Supreme Court has granted them the privileges and protections meant for people under the Bill of Rights. The First Amendment, freedom of speech, and the 14th Amendment, equal treatment, are being perverted from their original intentions of protecting people. Corporate power and government are now become synonymous. This was made painfully clear to Lake Monticello residents recently, and it has implications for the whole county. Laws and regulations are being sculpted to benefit corporations, not citizens. The deck is being stacked. The fox is guarding the hen house, and an amendment to the Constitution is needed to reclaim our democracy. A movement to do this, Move to Amend, is growing across the country and is building strength by starting with local resolutions and then moving on to the state level. So far, 16 states have called for a constitutional amendment. Individuals, towns, cities, counties, and organizations are joining this grassroots movement to reclaim our government. This Saturday, three different authors will be talking about this subject at UVA. If enough voices are raised, those voices will be heard in Richmond and in Washington. Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg has said, "If there is one decision I would overrule, it is Citizens United." I think the notion that we have all the democracy that money can buy strays so far from what our democracy is supposed to be. I'm here tonight to request that the Fluvanna County Board of Supervisors pass our own local resolution. Be it resolved that the County of Fluvanna hereby calls on our elected officials to join the tens of thousands of citizens, grassroots organizations, and local governments across the country in the Move to Amend campaign to call for an amendment to the Constitution to abolish corporate personhood and the doctrine of money as free speech and return our democracy, our elections, and our communities to America's human persons and to thus claim our sovereign right to self-governance. If this resolution is passed, the Fluvanna County Board of Supervisors would be joining a long list of people across the nation who are trying to get the fox out of the hen house.
Thank you. Anyone else would like to speak to the board? If not, I will close the first public comments. Now we have two public hearings. The first one is ZMP 15-01, Memory Land Property. Steve Tugwell, our senior planner.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the board. This is item ZMP 1501, and it's a rezoning request from I-1 and I-2 to I-2. It's a 6.746-acre parcel, tax map 4, section A, parcel 97A. It's located within the Zion Crossroads Community Planning Area. It was originally rezoned to I-1 and I-2 back in 2007, and since that time, there's been some ambiguity about where the zoning line is, and so this would essentially resolve that issue if it were rezoned all to I-2. This is a zoning map. Subject parcel is identified here. It's adjacent to the existing Mr. Dillard's property there, is zoned I-1, and adjacent to the correctional facility. Aerial image. This is the applicant's sketch plan. Again, it's about 6.7-acre parcel. A few photographs for the board. This is looking south. It's looking towards the DOC. And back when we had a little more snow on the ground, captured our public notice sign. Again, this property's in the Zion Crossroads Community Planning Area, so it is in one of our designated growth areas, part of the comp plan. Comp plan considers this area conducive to further development due to its location and proximity to major transportation networks. Is one area that should be zoned for industrial and or commercial uses, and the county should consider promoting economic development in these areas along routes 250 and 15. Back at the February 25th Planning Commission meeting, there were no public speakers. Planning Commission did recommend approval 4-0. In conclusion, request does appear to meet the intent of our comprehensive plan in that area is county's primary regional development area and targeted as regional employment center for primarily for mixed use, mixed income development. It will also help develop infrastructure needed for such development as well as diversifying county's tax base. Supervisors should consider how the request does or does not align with our goals and objectives of the comp plan. Suggested motion for the board, and the representative is also here tonight if you have any questions for him.
Any questions for Mr. Tugwell?
No.
If not, I'll open the public hearing. Anyone who would like to speak on ZMP15-04 Memoryland property as presented?
01.
Pardon?
01.
01. Yes, thank you for the correction. Memory Lane Property, LLC, please come to the mic, give your name, your address, please. And this is Mr. Shimp.
Yes, ma'am. My name is Justin Shimp. I'm the civil engineer for the project. I'm downtown Charlottesville, 201 East Main Street, my office. We're here tonight to two things. We clean up a little bit of this zoning that happens to be split, and then it's about looking for some additional opportunities in this specific parcel. So this parcel is owned a portion I-2 and a portion I-1. I-2 tends to allow for slightly more manufacturing type process using water, particularly for more of less storage and more manufacturing process based things, right? And this particular portion of our site, at Zone I-1, happens to be downstream of the sewer plant at the correctional facility. And so it presents a nice opportunity to set up uses that can reuse the wastewater from the sewer plant. So we want to set the zoning in place and our next step will be to get a road back to this site so that we can really market this as an opportunity for reuse. And water is not something that you can necessarily always grab out of the ground in great quantities, and this is opportunity that an industrial user needs a lot of water, they can stop right in here and use this resource, really, in this particular location. So it's really just to sort of open that opportunity up. We have some interested parties. We don't have anything set in stone yet. I did want to note in the minutes, the Planning Commission, I think, there was a note, it was a typo, that said that I think it said that Mr. Shimp can guarantee it will happen, and that's a typo. It's I can't guarantee that someone will come in there and use the water. I wish I could. I would have retired by now if I could guarantee you hire me, land will get bought and built, but I can't do that, unfortunately. So, but it is the right type of location, I believe, for this use. It doesn't have any neighbors other than the correctional facility. And I would note that some of the really heavy industrial uses really still require a special use permit. So this not opens up to everything. It opens up to slightly more intense uses, but we think it opens up a lot of opportunities for this reuse, and that's the main purpose here. The owner, Mr. Alan Dillard, is here with his son as well. They'd be happy to answer your questions, and I'd be happy to answer your questions that you all have.
Okay, did I open the public hearing too soon?
No,
I should have heard from you first.
He can talk during
the meeting.
The conventional way would be hear from the applicant, but this is fine.
Okay. All right, do we have any questions, anything we need to
talk? Some of the can you give us some ideas of some of the potential uses of the property?
Well, they range quite a bit. The simple one is something like a concrete mix or something like that. They can use a lot of water. Mr. Diller has a construction company, and they use a lot of water for dust control in the summertime. So there can be a sort of taps up to fill water trucks with that water. Sometimes process things, BioCat type operation over in Louisa. I think they use something like 25 or 30,000 gallons of water a day. So there's some uses like that that just have a lot of water use that might be an opportunity.
And the water that is pulled out, in theory, could help on some of our equipment capacities as well, too.
Madam Chairman, I think one thing, and Mr. Shimp can correct me, but I think TMD. I'm correct about this. He said it was the wastewater from the wastewater plant. It's actually the effluent, treated effluent
right.
from the plant.
Which currently goes back into the river.
Right. As you know, as you've been told, there are other uses you can make of that effluent.
So can we get nutrient credits for that?
Potentially.
But in any event, it's not sewage.
It's not our effluent at this point.
Oh. Okay. Any other discussion questions?
Or any other citizens?
Any other citizens would like to talk about Memory Land Property, LLC? Okay. If not, I will close the public hearing, and it will come back to the board for either any further discussion or a motion.
I move to approve an ordinance to amend Chapter 8 of the County Code to add a...
I
move that the Board of Supervisors approve
You're on the wrong one.
ZMP 1501 of the attached ordinance. Or ZMP 1501.
You want it.
You can finish.
Yeah, yeah. You were starting with something totally different.
That's all right. I was way ahead of the world.
Good. You're usually are mine. I move that the Board of Supervisors approve ZMP 1501 of the attached ordinance for ZMP 1501, a request to amend the Savannah County zoning map with respect to 6.746 acres of tax map 4, section A, parcel 97A, to rezone the same from I-1 industrial limited and I-2 industrial general to I-2 industrial general.
Okay.
I second my first motion.
All right. It's been motioned by Mr. O'Brien and seconded by Mr. Ellenbrook. All in favor?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Chair votes aye. Our next
you were just one motion ahead.
Our next public hearing is Cost Recovery Ordinance by Cheryl Elliott, Emergency Services Coordinator.
Good evening.
Good evening.
All right, tonight is to hold the public hearing about the ordinance, to adopt the ordinance. And this ordinance allows the county to establish a program if you desire. This does not create the cost recovery program. So it simply paves the way for that to happen. And in the future, the billing service contract will need to come before you. And then also you will have an opportunity to review, approve, adopt, amend the policies, procedures, and guidelines that we move forward on that.
Can we
close
that?
Sure.
Okay.
Oh, so we can.
Not late.
The key portions of the ordinance, there are four sections of it, and the first segment is the purpose, and it's basically to exercise your right to charge for transport services. The second section has some definitions in it. The third section says that anybody who operates EMS transport must have a permit by the Board of Supervisors or by the county in order to do that. This would also be related to the DERA, or the Designated Emergency Response Agency, that we currently have in place. And then the last section is one that you may have a little more discussion about, and that this sets up a number of things. One, that reasonable fees will be set by a resolution, and that will be brought to you at a later date also. And the fees that we ultimately would recommend would be based on some of the advice that the billing company would give us. And normally they're set at about what the market will bear, or what the insurance companies readily pay, because you don't want to set your fees so high that you have a lot of write-off. So there's a sweet spot as far as what those fees would be of what should be billed and what could be collected. So it's a little it's a balancing act there. Then the second section that is currently in your draft is that is stipulating that the funds would be used for the provision of continuing emergency services, specifically for emergency services. But it also the purpose of the ordinance also states this. So whether you see that as being redundant or making it more maybe more tied to being only using it for emergency services. And then the last provision in this section allows the county administrator to establish the policies and procedures. But as you know, you have a big say in that. It's not
they'll come to you like all policies.
Yes.
And procedures.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
But it's standard language that the county administrator creates policies and procedures, brings to the board for adoption, and then puts them in effect.
You're the one to adopt.
Of course. But the county administrator doesn't create policies and procedures for day-to-day operations, yes, but doesn't create policies on what we bill, what we don't bill, how you collect it, how we don't collect it.
I
that
know.
Comes to you. You task me with creating those things and bringing to you for approval and then enacting those.
So if we, as we proceed in this line, we are right now at March 18th with the public hearing on the ordinance itself. We would move then to establish those program policies and fees and bring a resolution to you and as far with moving ahead. There would be the billing contract. We are already in process of trying to bring a billing contractor on board, but that as that process would go on, obviously the contract would come to you to help with that. And then provider training, roll out education to the public, what to expect, what it looks like. And then what we're planning is in June to bring an update of how we're faring on all this if you decide, if you task us to move ahead with this project. And then we are estimating that the program would start first quarter of FY16, so sometime July, August, September. It's going to depend a lot on whether the ducks all get in a row and whether there's a lot of pieces that would need to go in place.
Okay.
So do you have any questions for me? I know this is very general.
No, it looks like we're on schedule pretty well. Mm-hmm.
No, we're not ready yet. We have to have the public hearing first. Thank you, Ms. Go ahead. You have something else?
Well, just that in the policy, you know, as we work toward that, there will be, you know, I know you've asked for what the funding implications would be for the various plans, and it's going to be guessing until we get our billing company on board to be able to help us have some things a little bit more set in, you know, from experience to be able to give you those kinds of numbers. So we will, with the policy, we will bring something to you that we think would be a good fit, and then we can always pull back later at that point. So,
all right, thank you. Now I will open the public hearing. Anyone who would like to speak about the cost recovery ordinance, please come to the mic, give your name and address, and you have 5 minutes. This is
sorry
the time.
About mix-up.
That's all right.
My name is Lyle Plitt. I'm at 25 Piedmont Lane, Palmyra, Lake Monticello, and I'm here to address your consideration of the county ordinance for the billing of 911 emergency medical services. I've been an EMT here in Fluvanna for 8 years. I run 350 to 400 calls a year. I run more calls than anybody else in Fluvanna County by way of background. I remember when I started my training for my EMT enhanced certification at UVA, the instructor reminded us of the first line of the Hippocratic Oath, first do no harm. There are unintended consequences of this billing which can do harm to patients, which I hope you consider in your decision making. My primary concern is the potential barriers to patient care. The first barrier is the failure to call 911, at least in part due to financial considerations. Many think, well, the poor know the system, they know they're not going to have to pay anything. That's not a problem. Well, in reality, in Fluvanna, we have a lot of working poor, what I call working poor. These are people, very proud people. They're working two jobs to keep things together. And they are very sensitive to the cost of going to the hospital. In terms of not calling 911, I've had patients with who have had TIAs, mini strokes the day before. They've had a heart attack, chest pain the day before. They haven't called 911. They're worried about going to the hospital. They owe money to UVA. They owe money to Martha Jefferson. And by the way, this is at the lake as well as throughout the county. And so we get on scene, and they've got a full-blown stroke. And we go through the history and say, well, you know, why didn't you call? I mean, and the same thing, we get people with acute heart attacks and then having chest pain. And they hold off until it gets really bad. The other problem is once we get to the patient, there's a heavy refusal to go to the hospital. There are people who I say, well, I'll check you out on the truck, but I think you really need to go to the hospital because. And they say, well, I owe money here, I owe money there. You know, I really don't want to do that. If I can you treat me here? And most of the time, we can't. We need to get them to a hospital. They need to be seen by a doctor. Usually, I can convince them to go to the hospital. I tell them, we're unpaid volunteers. There is no charge for transport in Fluvanna County. And so it won't cost you anything from us. And when you get to the hospital, I will personally call social services, get someone to talk to you about how to arrange the financials and maybe get you some relief from the financials. They know that the only reason I say they have to go to the hospital is because of my medical assessment, not because I'm making money paid or because the county is making money on the call. So I'm very, very concerned about that. And a lot of what you don't know is we transport a lot of patients which Medicare and the insurance companies consider non-emergent. In other words, they feel they need to go to the hospital, they're sick, whatever. Medicare and the insurance is very strict. So if you have a problem where you can go to the hospital in your private vehicle, even if you don't have a private vehicle, they pay a minimum. So we may bill them $500, $600, $700 here in the county. And Medicare may only pay $100 or even less. And I've had questions from people who have been billed in other places, and they say, why did I get this big bill? My insurance didn't cover it, Medicare. I said, well, you had flu-like symptoms. You know, somebody took you to the hospital, but that's not considered emergency. And so the patient would wind up owing quite a bit of money to the hospital. With patient billing, people were going to be told in your public announcement, well, nobody will be refused transport if they owe money to the county or whatever, and you know, we'll take anybody. And what they won't be told is, oh, by the way, you're still going to get another bill, and if you have compassionate billing here, you're still going to get three calls from the billing agency trying to get the money. And you know, we have some very proud people, and they want to pay their way, and it's a real problem. In the past, you've been told there were legal issues in terms of insurance billing only and compassionate billing the patient for everything that's not paid. And I don't know if that's still the belief, but as far as I know, whoops, that's not true. I better get faster. Louisa County is doing soft billing, insurance only. They've been doing that for a number of years. Albemarle County is billing soft billing. They do not bill the patient. None of them bill a patient, unless they're a non-resident, of course, which we would have to do, too, if we chose that. So I see no reason why we can't have, if we have to have soft billing of any kind. In a perfect world, we wouldn't bill for 9/11 calls. And I realize we need the revenue. And so as a compromise, I think, yeah, maybe we have to go with soft billing, insurance only. It's money that it's money that's going to be paid by the insurance companies. It's free money, if you will. I think there are unintended consequences. But I would say go ahead and do it. Before you do that, though, I think it's really important to get realistic estimates of what you are going to get, because I've heard some big numbers, and analyzing the Louisa numbers, if we did soft billing, for example, we get nowhere near some of the numbers I've heard. So I would ask, that's a balance, because you got to see how much money am I going to get and how much is it going to hurt the people of Havana County. And if it's a lot of money, you know, I say, well, we got to go get it. But, you know, if it's only a small amount, you know, maybe it's only a couple hundred thousand dollars, you say, is this trip worth it? So I'll conclude. I want to give you one example of somebody that at Lake Monticello, in October, I got a call from an 80-year-old something man, and he's at Lake Monticello, and he got a bill for over $500 from Louisa because they made a mutual aid call, and they have to charge non-residents. And his wife had Alzheimer's, and she had to go to the hospital for some test. It was a non-emergent call. So the insurance paid, it was $86. He was stuck for over $800, for over $500. He said, I don't have that money, this 80-year-old guy. He said, I'm going to have to borrow the money. What do I do? He called the rescue squad because he thought it was us. I explained it was Louisa. So when you're doing your consideration, and there was nothing I could say, you know, when you're considering which way to go and what to do, I would ask you to ask yourselves, what would you tell that person? You know, this guy's 80, his wife's got Alzheimer's. They ruled it a non-emergent call. He couldn't take her to the hospital. We took her, or Louise took her. So in conclusion, in your wisdom, I would ask you to think about it and first do no harm. Thank you.
Thank you. Would anyone else like to speak to the board about the cost recovery ordinance? If not, I'll close the public hearing and...
Just one reminder before you begin. You're not voting on any on the program or rates or how the bill, and then that will come in the coming weeks, and then you'll have that'll be on your formal agenda for other people to comment on too.
Okay. So do we have any more discussion on this ordinance, or are we ready for the vote?
I do have a comment.
Yes, sir.
On this ordinance, I would strongly recommend that the first paragraph of the ordinance states the state code, repeats the state code, and the state code says, hereby determined that the power set forth herein must be exercised in order to assure the provision of adequate and continuing emergency services and to preserve, protect, and promote the public health, safety, and general welfare. That's the whole intent of this program. But what I would suggest is you do not include paragraph, subparagraph 864, subparagraph B, which says funds collected from the service fees established by this article shall be used for the purpose of defraying costs and improving services associated with providing emergency medical transport services, including but not limited to, et cetera. Because if you do that, you've got a specific task that you have to do with that funds. Clearly, when you adopt this ordinance, you are acknowledging state code requirements that says this is what you're doing the purpose for. But if you include that last paragraph, and that's not a required paragraph, but it some ordinances have, some don't. If you include that, you don't have a lot of choice on where you apply those funds. Now, and I wouldn't want you to get into the vagaries of, okay, is it really tied to that in the budget, or is it really tied to this? It's tied to your budget, and certainly supporting this function. You know, you've all talked about if this brings in revenue, that will help defray the defray the cost of the contract services or anything else that it can defray in our emergency services system. But that paragraph, I think, is more specific than is required and needed.
It locks you in it. Budget time. And
I don't know if you have.
I think it sort of locks you in a little more than we intended.
Well, that's my opinion, but
it does, and that's the purpose of that language. So, if you were to adopt this, and let's say you got $10,000 in reimbursement, and the board elected simply to put that in the general fund and used it for various county purposes, and then didn't appropriate money for the emergency services, this ordinance, this language would make that improper.
Not allow us to do that.
That's right.
Yeah.
So, obviously, it's not the idea to make this a cash cow, and I don't think it would be a cash cow even if you wanted it to be, but that's the purpose of that language.
That's good.
Are you suggesting to omit that?
Sorry?
Are you suggesting to omit that section?
I'm not suggesting it because...
I am.
I'm talking to
Mr. Dickles is, yeah.
That's what I'm talking
about. Yeah, I'm suggesting
I don't think
that paragraph...
Is there any harm by omitting it? I mean, we're still committing to doing it. We're just not...
I don't think there is particularly because you don't have an obligation to you don't have an obligation to charge for these services. I think you have the authority to, but you don't have to. Now, I think if it became the case, either with or without this language, if it became the case that you were simply using it as a source of revenue for the general fund,
sure.
I think that would be a problem. But if you didn't formally earmark it, I don't think that's a problem.
Well, I maybe from a budgetary point of view, I would suggest that if rescue services required $300,000 a year to operate and the program got $400,000 a year and rescue services demonstrated a need for $300,000 to effectively operate and you said, no, we're only going to give you $250,000, when you could have fully funded them, I think that's where, that, from me, my point of view, that's where the conundrum comes in.
Right.
But if you say that all $400,000 goes to rescue services when they only needed three to efficiently operate, that's also a problem for the county. So I wouldn't want to back you into either corner.
Would it just be amended to say something like, in no event shall the county's revenue recovery costs exceed, the revenue recovery collections exceed the costs
No, I don't think that's a good idea, because
the problem is, I think his line is
the problem is you're trying to, if you're doing that, the collections you're doing are on the way, but you're not going to know the bottom line till you get to the end of the year. So if you if then you end up with $5,000 too much, what are you going to do? Refund it to the last guy that took, got a ride? I think that would be not
to me. To me, this line guarantees. To me, this line guarantees to the citizens that we're not using this to pay for something else. We're only using this here. And I think that, you know, if we're making $600,000, we're going to use that up in buying vehicles and things of that nature.
Well, it's just going to pay for.
It's just going to
contract
pay for
services.
Stuff.
Yeah, I don't think anybody disagrees that that's the intent. And so the real question is what happens when the dynamics change, as Mr. Nichols pointed out, is, you know, let's say 20 years from now, our county is working out this ordinance and we become efficient in the delivery of the services. Without that end, then the guarantee is not there. The reality is the guarantee is there now based on, you know, the total cost of providing the services versus the relationship of doing that. So that's why I suggested something that doesn't necessarily lock us to a budgetary constraint, but yet guarantees that it's not in excess.
Well, by state code.
Paragraph cover.
Right. This is state code in that first paragraph.
Right. I don't think
that's pretty much.
That's required. That finding is required by the statute in order to adopt this program. Mm-hmm. I don't feel strongly about this, because I think if you ended up where the emergency services, let's say, billed or their needs amounted to $300,000 and you actually collected $400,000, one easy way to deal with that, if you had to earmark it, would be simply carry it over. And if you were consistently collecting that much more, the obvious thing to do is cut the fees back. So I don't feel,
you know,
Mr. Nichols feels more comfortable from a budgetary standpoint. I'm not going to stand in the way of that.
What do other areas do? Do they put it in a savings account? I've heard Louisa has
it. It is wildly different depending on where you go. Ms. Elliott, maybe you can come up and comment. It's wildly different where you go. Some people have a plan for the first year or two. Mm-hmm. Some people don't include this language. Some people do include this language, and it varies all over.
This language comes from Alma.
Ms. Cheryl?
Actually, from Powhatan.
Copy
from Powhatan.
Ms. Cheryl,
yes.
What is other kind? Do they roll it over into a fund for emergency?
Some are. It is designated, and so that it does go, and it would cover CIP purchases, which you could easily eat up quite a bit of money on new ambulances and things like that. But all expenses related to providing rescue services. But then there are others that it does go in the general, Albemarle, I believe, it goes into the general fund, but the rescue squads are given priority in asking for additional funding. So it really runs the gamut of how that plays.
Okay, thank you. Any more discussion? Mm-hmm.
You really have to have a commitment to the purpose of the program.
Now that I think about it, and just listening to you, I don't think it hurts leaving this in here. The intent is to fund emergency services, and the odds of us ever kept breaking even on this thing are slim to it's almost none as it is. So the intent here is to cover as much of that $600,000 as it sits today, which could be a lot more in a year. Right. So I don't think it hurts having this in there. And I think Mr. Sheridan's correct in being clear to the public that the reason for this is to cover the expenses and the ongoing costs.
And we can come back and readdress this issue.
Well, you can. It's an ordinance, though, and so you've got to go through a public hearing and adopt. We shouldn't be changing ordinances, you know, every other week. But I'm not telling you which way to go. I'm just suggesting that
if it becomes an issue that we're getting to that huge amount left over,
we can amend.
Then we can amend it.
That's a good problem to have.
All right, does anyone else have anything to say about whether we leave B or take it out?
I'd leave it in.
Leave it in. Mr. O'Brien, consensus?
Yeah, I think the county administrator's point is, just from an accounting perspective, they provide some flexibility, not from an intended perspective, to not do it. And so I guess the amount of the question would be, do you think that the examples in which that flexibility
There's not a lot of stuff that's onerous. I mean, we have to do whatever you adopt. And some things are a little more inefficient than others, but your will is just fine. Mm-hmm. In this case, it just doesn't make much sense, in my view, to commit to doing this when you're not even sure of the scope of the program and things like that. So whichever you want goes, okay.
I don't think it's
a necessary restriction.
Okay. Is it consensus that we leave it in?
Yes.
All right.
Need a motion.
Yes, we need a motion. Wait a minute. I need to close public hearing, right?
No, you did that.
Did I close?
No, you didn't.
No, I didn't. All right. I'd like to close the public hearing on the cost recovery ordinance and come back to the board for a motion if you're ready.
I move to approve an ordinance to amend Chapter 8 of the County Code to add a new Section 8-6, including subsections 8-6-1 through 8-6-4, to provide for the licensing of ambulances and for the collection of fees to defray costs and improving services associated with providing emergency medical transport services.
Second.
All right. It was motion by Mr. Sheridan and second by Mr. Weave. All in favor?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Chair votes aye. Thank you. And we do not have any presentations, but we have Mr. Dahl is stepping forward.
We probably need to go back up to action matters.
Action matters.
Action
you skipped
matters.
Over action matters, man.
Okay, action matters. Set advertised. I was wondering why you were up there, Mr. Dahl. Okay, we have set advertised operating budget and CIP.
Madam Chair, members of the board, what we're bringing before you is the advertisements for the public hearings for the budget and the associated tax rates with that budget and the five-year capital improvements plan. I guess we can briefly go over the budget worksheet that you all were just discussing at the work session an hour ago.
Isn't it? Yeah. But you took the copy word off there?
I did.
Yeah. I'm just trying to make sure I got the right file.
Okay, we have new copies, right?
Yes, ma'am. Yeah, so from the work session, we made all the changes that the board agreed upon. Like I said, we as far as revenues over expenditures in column F before, we had the $51,000. We made the adjustments where we took out the vehicle admin fees of $100,000, which...
maybe go to...
What's that? Yeah, if you go to the right.
Thank you.
I can't see my screen.
Okay, so yeah, so there we go. So we left out the vehicle admin fees of $100,000. We took that out. We used $47,843 for use of fund balance to offset that deficit. And then the only other change that was made was the $6,722 to provide an additional 0.5% staff raise to county staff for September 1st, and then that offset was comes from school funding. So if there's any questions that the board has in regards to the changes that you all made in the work session, I'd be happy to answer those questions. If not, we can go into the actual agenda item and the advertisements that are going to be going forward.
Can we start all over?
Any.
Sure.
Next year.
Next year.
Any questions?
No, I think it's pretty well where we.
And these sheets right here, these sheets reflect all those changes. Yeah, they're all. We made the changes during your closed session. So those sheets
if you look in the top left hand corner, your main budget sheets, it says version 8. That's the version you're working off of now. Is 8.
Version 8.
It's about 16 for us, but we only numbered yours 8. So.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good work.
I can see it. I don't need to use my bifocals.
That it numbers is. Are so big. You
yeah, the tiny. Yeah. Especially the bottom numbers at the bottom. You can see them very well.
So as you see at the bottom of your page, the total budget, the total BOS advertised budget is $68,312,005. Revenues and expenditures both balance. And then, like I said, the associated tax rate for that budget is the increase in the personal property at from 415 to 435. The real estate tax rate increased from 88 cents to 0.899 cents, and then the machinery and tools tax stays the same at $2.
And Madam Chair, if you don't mind, I think it would be useful just to run down some of the highlights of the budget.
You need to go back to the 435.
Okay.
We had agreed on 430.
It is.
Okay.
No, it was 435 last week. Sorry.
Oh, okay.
So the public's aware of some of the highlights, school funding increased essentially $750,000 over last year's
minus
$6,700. Yeah, so $600 or $742,000, whatever. So, but school funding went up essentially $750,000 over base from last year, held harmless from the state decreases in funding. County staff is at a 1.5% cost of living increase. The operations cuts that were in the county administrator's budget have been restored in the departments. Some additional funding went to Jaunt to fully fund them. That was $6,000. $37,000 went to Region 10 to increase our staffing, our funding to that organization to mirror what the other counties do at about 75 to 78% of funding request. Social services had a second position added. They had a social worker or benefit specialist first, and now
benefit next.
Clerical person on this one. Mm-hmm. The E-911 position, was added. The jail funding is on various lines here, but essentially the jail's funded to the request. The county administrator's budget had a request for taking a part-time position to full-time. That was rescinded, and we put that in another department. The James River Water Authority debt service actually went down a little bit based on the projections. We added a paralegal position to the Commonwealth's Attorney's Office, or you added. Parks and Rec software module, new modules in there. There were some professional services funding restored back into the Commission of the Revenue and the Treasurer's budgets. The Lake Monticello Volunteer Fire and Rescue Service will be receiving $65,000 annually in debt support for their new facilities that they're building. The cost recovery staff, I moved a little bit of that money to finance because as we hire the new person, those requirements will be added to that new position. And then a few other things were reduced down that weren't needed now because of the because of changes up here. And then on the revenue side, there was just a little bump in personal property revenue today that the commissioner reported to us, so we've added that in there. There is $47,000 being used out of fund balance to make this budget balance out this year. So $47,000 out of savings to balance this budget.
We've lost $100,000.
Yes.
Yeah. There was a potential to increase vehicle and motorcycle license fees each year. Right now they're at $33 and $18. That was taken back out. We've added an additional $100,000 expectation in cost recovery for EMS services if that's adopted. And then personal property tax went up to from 415 per 100 to 435. The social services staff and constitutional officer staff and registrar, we get some offsets from the state for their pay raises. So the pay raises we do for them, we get some offsets from the state. So those are additional revenues coming in. The tax rate went from 88 this year, an equalized rate of 86, but an 88 cent tax rate this year to 89.9. It's a 5% increase from the equalized rate. I think it's a 5% increase from the equalized rate. We've got some additional revenue, federal revenue for schools, additional local revenue for schools, or other local revenue for schools, and additional some change in state revenue for schools. And so that brings you back to the zero part, where the budget is balanced on both revenues and expenditures. But there aren't very many things in the budget requests this year that were really pressing, urgent, dire need of, that weren't fit into the budget in some way. And so it's a pretty reasonable and healthy budget, but you all did a lot of good work on kind of holding the line on it too, because there will be additional budget pressures in the future with, you know, water systems coming in and the jail funding and things like that. So I think this is
just to remind the board budget. And the public too, that just the things that Mr. Nichols went over, those were the changes from the county administrator's budget to what you're advertising right now.
And so this sheet here, this will be available. It'll show what was in the county administrator's budget versus what was put into the Board of Supervisors' advertised budget, and that's these things down the side. So,
but I think we generally concur that future pressures probably going to be greater than they were even this year, like next year coming when we get the water system. Take on another debt.
Well,
we're going to be pressured more even than we were this year.
It's hard not to see that there are things coming in the future. The Central Virginia Regional Jail will have some increased costs because they're expanding, and not all the increased costs are in this year, so there'll clearly be some in the out years. If you go forward with the project for the Zion Crossroads water system, there will clearly be debt service in your budget for that, and then operational costs in your budget for that. If we do well on revenue recovery, that will help moderate a little bit. That will help offset some of the costs that are already built in your budget. But remember, you've already built one penny of that into this year's budget, so you're really talking maybe another penny moderation next year. So indeed, there are some budget pressures in the coming years, but largely related to your infrastructure push while maintaining your day-to-day operations that you've got. So certainly some challenges coming.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Right.
Any other questions, or are we?
So let me have Mr. Dahl run through the paperwork you've got to do.
All right.
Go back to here.
And really, the advertisements that were in your board package,
yes.
There's going to be an advertisement for the budget, which also includes what the 15 tax rates and then the 14 calendar tax rates are. We just plug those figures in. There's the public hearing notice for the capital improvements, five-year capital improvements. And then there's just a detailed budget advertisement.
So which one do you want?
Number one is the actual agenda item that the board has to approve on.
Can you make that a little bigger?
Yeah, I will. But so what you've got is all those documents here. This is what will be advertised in the paper about the budget, the CIP, the tax rates.
Do you just want to open up the first one?
Two public hearings.
Do you want to open just number two really quick?
Okay.
Let's see.
So there's your advertisement that will be in the paper.
So you see it's over to the left side of the screen. It's a $68,312,005, and which is a 14% decrease from 15, and that's largely due to a big decrease in capital funding. That's mainly what it is. And then it just has the comparison of the 14 to 15 rates that you're advertising.
But it's a 5% increase on basic tax rate, but the budget went down because of CIP changes.
All right. So is that 2015 or FY16?
No, the tax rates
are effective.
Fiscal year 15 is when they're decreased from. That's what the comparison is. The rates will be for calendar year 15.
Okay.
The exclusion of the permit fees for the vehicles, that can still be done
through any time throughout the year. It doesn't have to be tied to this. Ordinance process in public hearing.
Well, and really at the end of the day, too, for the vehicle license fees, the treasurer's office just bills that during first half bills, and they don't do that until, say, May?
Next year.
June time frame. So, I mean, even if we did it in December or March or February, those fees wouldn't be...
It would be collecting... it for half of the year in calendar year 16, but it would be fiscal year, first half of calendar year 16, but it'd be the second half of fiscal year.
Right. Okay.
So you've got that one that's going to be in the paper, and then you've got
and this is going to advertise for the following 2 weeks in the Fluvanna review.
And then you've got the capital improvements projects one.
Okay.
And same with that, advertised for the next two following weeks.
2 weeks.
Yep.
Yeah. I saw that.
And then the final one was the
is the big advertisement, and this will be a full page advertisement. Same advertisement as always.
Into the major categories.
Right. Right.
Is the budget doesn't go on the website until we approve it?
No, your advertised budget will be on the website starting tomorrow.
Okay.
Yep.
Right. Starting 19th.
Yep.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. That will be on there along with your CIP, the full CIP, and along with the budget balance worksheet, so people can see the trail there.
Good.
And so then your formal motion for tonight is.
Do we have any more discussion? Are you ready to make the motion?
I move the Board of Supervisors authorize staff to advertise FY16 budget. You stopping now?
Yes, but I'm trying
to get the tax rate and capital improvements plan CIP for public hearing on April 8, 2015. The proposed budget amount for FY16 is $68,312,005.
I'm trying to make it bigger, sorry.
I'm not that old. Is it moving or is it just me? The advertised real property tax rate is 0.899 cents per hundred. The advertised personal property tax rate $4.35 per hundred. The advertised machinery and tools tax rate of $2 per hundred.
Okay, you heard a motion. Do we have a second?
Second.
All right. It's moved by Mr. Ellenbrook, second by Mr. Bryant. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Chair votes aye.
Is this the Savannah board?
2-0.
Pretty amazing.
If I said something right now, would I be in line?
No, go.
Because I can tell you right now, there's a lot of times I've walked away and I haven't been proud of what we did. But working with y'all last week made me feel that way.
Oh, right. Thank you, Mr. Sure. Thank you. All right, now.
Staff feels the same.
Department of Forestry Grant Award. It's by Mr. Jason Smith, Director of Parks and Recreation.
Madam Chair and members of the board, thank you for your time tonight. In relation to the Department of Forestry Grant that you have in front of you, I wanted to give you all an update on the progress that we've made. Back in October, the board approved us to take advantage of the meadow management plan itself, essentially maximizing the utility usability of certain areas at the park to improve programming and nature educational opportunities. In definition, our renaturalization areas are open areas for reestablishment of meadows and trees to, again, help promote and create awareness of what we have to offer at Pleasant Grove.
Nice.
Excuse the typo. This was actually approved on October 1st by the board when we explained the pros and cons of renaturalization and using the park to our advantage. Some of the highlighted in red phrases are new partnerships. Some to point out, the Master Gardeners up at the top under local partnerships, we've got 27 gardeners that haven't had their first meeting, which is tomorrow. 27 gardeners that are going to be helping out with the pollinator garden, which is going to be adjacent to the community garden next to the Pleasant Grove House Museum. Pretty phenomenal considering that they haven't even met, and we've already got 27 folks helping out. The school system has also jumped on board. We can jump down to the program capacity verbiage down at the bottom. We just secured one of our master naturalists, Walter Hussey, has secured 250-plus first-grade students to come out to the park. So that's something we didn't have this time last year, which is a testament to not only his work, but the work that we've been able to do at the park.
And they promised to only lose 10%.
First graders. Oh, they're going to have a
And it's also going to be going towards their SOL learning standards. So, another really cool highlight, the Virginia Bluebird Society has donated five Bluebird boxes that we have up at the park, and we're going to utilize those. We'll get to the map in a minute, but we're going to utilize those to mark the manholes, but to also program and plan around our Kids in Nature family hike loops and rerouted trails.
If we can get in touch with the carpentry teacher up there, I probably can. If we get the measurements or something like that, they might be able to make more if you need.
Sure.
That project.
One of the other really cool things that's happening with the VBS Society is we've also been placed on their state and regional website, so we'll be able to capture some additional tourism. And then once they're at the park, we can bring them into the museum and show off the county.
Okay. Are you going to use cedar on your bluebirds to make them?
They actually come prefabricated, so okay. Everything comes together. They're in small kits, okay. And they just get punched gotcha. On the ground, and we're good to go. Some other accomplishments, the meadow areas out front of the park, including, we'll get to the map, there's an area where the paved roundabout begins. We're referring to those fields as the Quail Meadow areas. We've planted 326 trees along those hedgerows. You probably noticed driving along the 53, the dirt that's plowed up, that's creating better seed to dirt germination to increase.
Have you gotten any persimmon trees or anything like that yet, or are they not in yet?
We've got a number of plum trees and other seedlings.
I saw persimmons in it. That's our tree for the county.
Actually, let me ask Mr. Hussey to come up.
I saw persimmons on your list, and I said, great.
He can talk a little bit more to the seedlings.
The van is sealed.
He can talk a little bit more to what's been planted in the seedlings and how that's going to benefit us.
Yes.
Good.
Mr. Hussey. We have six varieties of trees. We're looking for diversity because we don't want to end up with a disease or something that would wipe out the whole hedgerow or the whole what we're trying to do here. What we do have is two wildlife food plots we planted each with about 100 American plum trees. We're going to try to keep the deer out of those until they grow up. It's a wonderful area for birds, particularly quail. We'd like to get quail back into this area of the park, this area of the county. So we hope to do that. We have other food species. Persimmon is one of them. We're actually going to have hazelnut. We have hazelnut out there. We're looking at mulberry. Red mulberry is another source of food. Black cherry, which is already a good number of those in the park, as well as persimmon in the park. And so we're going to have those, too. If you're really interested in trees, one of the things we did, the Master Naturalists, we worked with the Girl Scouts. And in achieving some of their projects, they needed a project to work. So we helped with them in identifying trees in the park, and they designated part of it as a trail. They purchased the nameplates, etc., for the trees. And so if you'd like to go behind the library and look at the first bluebird box right behind the library near the trailhead, and then go down the trail that the scouts put together. And hopefully in another few months, you can take the kids and family nature hike trail and take off of that tree identification trail and go through the meadow as well. And we want to have a family-friendly kids kind of nature hike there around the library. And we're talking to Cindy and some others at the library. We'd like to also eventually have a discovery room at the library for the kids, too, to make it kind of a total family event and all-inclusive young kids in the discovery room as well as go out and play. So we're looking at all those. We have some oaks. Part of this grant would also get us some oaks, great acorns, and lots of wildlife, squirrels and deer like the acorns.
At Old Farm Day, you had displays there, did you not?
Yes, sir. In the Master Gardeners, I'm a Master Gardener, too. We put out to the membership last year what they would like to see focused, the community to focus on, and the Master Gardeners voted to focus on natives. So we had a lot of the native plants, which we're interested in doing here. The pollinator garden that we're going to put in will be native plants, like the milkweed, which is already present out there, coneflower and others. So we're really looking to bring the natives back as well. So all of these trees we're getting from Department of Forestry, Department of Game and Inland Fisheries are giving us plants, a lot of donations as well as grants. We're looking to do natives.
And yeah. Mr. Smith will be getting with all of you to schedule some 2x2, 4x4, 2x2 supervisors, 4x4 rides through the park to show you areas of the park and what the trails are looking like, what the various things are, what the plannings and the new trails are like, so that you'll be more familiar with what services and facilities are there without having to walk through the whole time. So.
Thank you.
Very good.
Well, as you can see, these are the accomplishments to date. The ones that are crossed out are obviously the ones that we've completed. Something that just happened over the last 24 hours was the ripped up area in the Kid and Family Nature Hike meadow in front of the library and sheriff's department. So this map is showing us what we've done to date. The Quail Meadow Trail is that front field.
Show Pleasant Grove House as a point of reference.
So the house is right here. Turf to trees, hedgerows, the kicked up dirt hedgerows, library, sheriff's office.
How many feet did we plant the trees back from the main road there below?
Was it 150.
150
feet, yes, okay. Sir. Cottontail Field Trail is the, so here's the house. We've rerouted some of these trails to incorporate wildlife and hiker, I guess, surprises.
And school track teams.
Right. So essentially, rather than having a trail follow the contour, we have the trails following the contour, so we don't have to deal with erosion issues, but they're cut off and zigzagged, so we want folks to come up on, you know, wildlife, rabbits.
And we have how many trails out there now?
We've got just over 20 miles
okay.
of trails. Pollinator Garden will essentially go adjacent to the community garden. Grouse grasslands. So the soccer fields are right here. Right across the way is food plot areas that Mr. Hussey spoke about. Tree trails directly behind the library. And then the proposed Kids and Family Nature Hike trail is going to be that front meadow.
The cultivating you did in the front meadow.
Mm-hmm. Yes, sir.
Right, is that the walkway or what is that going to be?
That's just where the trees were planted.
The hedgerows? So the hedgerows...
That's going to be where the hedgerow is.
Yes, sir.
Mm-hmm. Tell the board, too, about the community garden and what was done. Was it last week when the inmate workforce came?
So just yesterday, some of the inmates came out and installed two additional pathways along with a plot that's going to allow us to host someone that uses wheelchairs. So we have a raised garden for folks.
Is that inside the big fence?
Yes, sir. In the community garden. Mm-hmm. These.
Another reason why we want to encourage Central Virginia Regional Jail to keep that inmate workforce intact, if any way possible. All the counties get so much benefit out of it. Plus, the inmates get a lot of benefit of getting
the fresh air.
Yeah.
Okay. And when Mr. Hussey was last talking, he talked about some of the potential opportunities we have. One of the next steps is going to be to create signage and verbiage so we can tell folks, hey, this is what you could see. We'll have several informational kiosks at some of the trailheads that not only promote the natural habitat but can explain to folks why you're seeing it, what we've done. Part of that marketing initiative, we've added a meadow management page on our website to explain to folks, this is why you're going to see the hedgerows, this is what we're going to be putting in those hedgerows, and this is why. Again, here's a map of some of the opportunities that we have or will have. The bluebird box nesting trail. The bluebird boxes will be placed along the sewer line, essentially. The blue stars are designated areas where we essentially could have more bluebird boxes. Potentially a greenhouse, there are folks that are looking to give money to projects like this as far as environmental stewardship, a nature educational building close to the pollinator garden and community garden, where we could also host plant walks, plant hikes, the nature discovery room, which we've already discussed with the
building. Is that the cottage you're talking about? Nature.
Possibly. We could use that. These are just possibilities, okay, depending on, you know, how far we can go.
Your dream.
I need to get this in there. We are looking for volunteers to help with planting trees. If we've secured it, the Department of Forestry grant, they actually reached out to us and said, hey, we've got extra money left over. The deadline was December. They know what we're doing with the environment at Pleasant Grove, with trying to promote nature. So they were very patient and anxious to work with us. They called us up 3 weeks. That's why you're seeing this now.
Do you have any idea when?
We can put the order in tomorrow if the board approves the grant, and probably in the next 2 weeks. So we'll be looking for volunteers.
Would be a good time if mm-hmm. possible to get students to
volunteers over there.
Yeah. The whole high school is over there.
Especially lacrosse players.
Doing
the high school
will come and
plant first graders.
And then I would be remiss to not mention Mr. Hussey and his work in recruiting and coordinating volunteers. I think to date he's probably planted close to 350 trees or had his hand in the dirt. Mr. Hussey. So a huge thanks to him and his buddies, the master gardeners, and all the folks that are starting to jump on board with this plan. With that, I'll take questions if you have any.
Any questions for Mr. Smith?
Making a lot of progress.
Very nice.
Those volunteer opportunities would look good on college transcripts, too.
It would. We'd be out there taking your pictures. We have a motion.
Yes, I move to accept the $3,632 tree grant award from the Department of Forestry and Wildlife County Administrator to execute the award agreement subject to county attorney approval as to form.
Second.
All right, it's been moved by Mr. O'Brien and second by Mr. Weaver. All in favor?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Chair votes aye.
Fine, John.
Thank you.
Thank you for your time.
Mm-hmm. We do not have any presentations. Consent agenda. Would anyone like to pull anything from the consent?
Just one note. The AP report was not in your package because of budget things and because we're down one. We'll get it on your next package.
Don't worry about it.
It's just been really busy, so I just marked it as not available. Sorry.
There you go.
Okay.
That's fine.
All right.
I move to approve the consent agenda, which consists of minutes of February 25th and March 4th, 2015.
Second.
Okay. It has been moved by Mr. Weaver and second by Mr. Sheridan that we approve the consent agenda. All in favor?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Okay, the chair votes aye. And students, if y'all have any questions about anything that has occurred here in the county, please feel free to.
Public comment.
This is public comment. You can step to the microphone.
We're not there yet.
I know we're not there. You know what I'm doing? I know what I'm doing. I'm
thinking. Give us some thought.
Yeah. You don't want to come up there and think.
Yes. Or if you don't want to come up there, you can ask any, come over to the county administrator's office.
Historic moment.
Right. Okay. Do we have any unfinished business? Any unfinished business? What about new business?
Yes, we do.
Okay.
Yes, we do. We have plenty of new business.
All right.
Do you have new business?
I do have new business.
Okay.
Is it the jet?
We can do that one. I can do mine.
All right.
Oh, Chad.
Yeah.
We'll do mine.
Mr. Allbuck, you shouldn't read this one.
You shouldn't read it.
I move to appoint.
Oh, that's right.
Mm-hmm. I move to appoint.
Robert Allenbrook
to the Central Virginia Regional Jail Board, replacing David Haney with a term to begin immediately. And I move to appoint Mr. Stephen Nichols to the Central Virginia Regional Jail Board at large position, replacing Robert Allenbrook with a term to begin immediately and to terminate on June 30, 2015.
Do we have a second?
Oh, I'm sorry. They are separate motions, so can they just do them together and vote one vote?
Yeah,
okay. I have a second.
One question. The term on the other one is that there is no end date.
It's indefinite based on your rules, and the jail authority agreement says that the boards of supervisors can set whatever terms they want, and you currently have no term set. It's just a citizen representative or a member representative indefinitely. In your case, it would automatically go until your end of service as the supervisor, because you're being put on there as a supervisor.
Or until I die, which will probably be sooner.
Well, let's hope not, because there's a lot of paperwork that has to be done.
No, that could be 80 years.
I'll put a card in your pocket in case
I'm
re-elected
20 more times.
But anyway, so yours will just automatically end at the end of your term if you weren't in office anymore. But other than that, it would just stay indefinite until the board changes. But remember, in January of 2016, you will reassign or reaffirm any board positions you all have.
All right, we have a motion on the floor. Do we have a second?
Second.
All right, it's been moved by Mr. O'Brien, second by Mr. Weave. All in favor?
Aye.
Anyone opposed?
I'm going to abstain.
All right, chair votes aye. That's 4-1 abstention. Okay, next.
So, Madam Chair, I would like to follow up on Mrs. Burkett's ask to the board that we make a resolution. I know that you've given us a lot of information, and I think the board should have the chance to evaluate it. I personally feel similarly to the way that she does, that this isn't humanity, it's a disaster to democracy. That's my personal opinion, but I'd like members of the board to be able to review that. So I'm going to ask that this resolution be presented next.
You are passing us. You're going to give us something to.
Yeah, she's giving it to us.
Okay,
so
we'll just have it.
At the next regular board meeting, right? At the regular.
Oh, is it in one? Is it in here?
I will put it on your April 1st agenda as an action item if you so choose.
Great.
Madam Chairman, there are some ramifications to this that you may want to consider, and I'm not speaking for or against this resolution, but there is. At least some sentiment that if there were to be a state called constitutional convention, that it would not be limited to the particular subjects which are mentioned in the call. So I've heard that with respect to there are several of these concepts going around, and there have been, and I think it was Delegate Marshall that spoke to this fairly recently about one or the other proposals for a constitutional convention. And the concern, and this is not my concern, I've just heard this enunciated, is that if you had a constitutional convention for perfectly benign purpose, it could morph into something that's less than benign. So I think that's one thing that you may want to consider in dealing with any issue like this.
I think that's a great point, and Larry Sabato wrote a book called More Perfect Union, in which he spoke about the fact that the Constitution and state conventions were intended to be ongoing processes, and the Constitution was a living document. Mm-hmm. And so I think participating in a democratic process where we see that happen, certainly in my lifetime, for the first time,
living really document.
In everybody's lifetime except Mr. Weaver's.
Yes, except mine.
All right.
Well, you might have seen, when they passed.
Yes, I saw when it passed. It.
Right. He was a George Washington. So,
he was right under that guy, John Hancock.
His photo was right there.
Here's the original pen.
Yeah. He had a selfie taken.
So let's sort of familiarize ourselves with this, yes, and it'll be on. So we'll be ready to say what we need to say.
We're good to go.
Now we have second comments. If you have anyone who would like to come speak, come to the mic, give your name, your address, and you have 5 minutes. Anyone?
Who's the A plus two here?
Come on. Okay, I'm closing this second.
They just want to go.
Come on, Zachary.
All right. We don't have a closed meeting. So do I have a motion to adjourn?
So made.
Second?
Second.
It's moved by Mr. Weaver and seconded by too many people. Mr. O'Brien, that we adjourn. All in favor?
Amen.
All right.